Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
So a lot of the times when Cumberbatch is like 25 years ago, I'm like, well, 25 years ago, Desi Plemons was in middle school.
Welcome to Recotopia, a happy home for recommended movies, shows, and music from two people you can definitely trust. Trustability varies by region, no guarantees implied. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Atkinson and Jeremy Scott.
I wonder what little lady made these.
All right, everybody, welcome to Recotopia. It's episode one. I'm Chris Atkinson.
And I'm Jeremy Scott.
And, God, we don't know what we're doing. Anyway,
we're going to recommend some shit. That's what we're doing.
That's basically what this is. This is a recommend show. We're going to come up with a whole bunch of stuff that we've been watching lately and talk about it. And then we're going to have a big recommend both of us have seen and talk and do a deep dive on those movies. And then we're going to try to come up with what would be a good double feature for that movie that we both recommend. I do not know what that movie is. Jeremy knows what that movie is.
This is correct. Because this was Chris's week to pick the main recommend deep dive. And I view this a little bit as like a movie club. The main recommend will be like a movie every week that you will find out a week in advance. At the end of this episode, we'll tell you what next week's movie is so that you have time to watch it. And then we're going to record live, starting with episode two for our Patreon Sin Club members. And you'll be able to chat along with us, and we'll be able to incorporate your thoughts into the discussion. And it'll be basically a movie club. But prior to that, we have some mini recommends. And then after that, we have this surprise. This would make a good double feature. And this one was tough. I'm going to be honest, before we get too far, should we start with our small recommends?
It's no big deal.
Itty bitty living space.
It's so small and light.
It's small. It's tiny. It's petite. It's wee.
Yeah, let's get into what we've been digging lately. I mean, I guess we could also make this, hey, this is a movie I saw 2 years ago that I never got a chance to say anything about too. But for the most part, this is going to be stuff that we have seen recently. I'll go ahead and start because I don't know how it was a couple weeks ago that Sidney Poitier died. And I was looking at the movies that he'd made, and I'm like, wow, you know, I've seen a handful of Sidney Poitier, but I haven't seen nearly as much as I should have. So I rectified that by watching, I watched, The Defiant Ones, and I watched Lilies of the Field and To Sir with Love and Guess Who's Coming to Dinner and In the Heat of the Night. And there was, I had seen In the Heat of the Night before. There are two sequels to In the Heat of the Night. I knew that They Call Me Mr. Tibbs was one of them because that was really obvious. But then there's another one called The Organization, which I haven't seen yet. But
oh, wow.
They Call Me Mr. Tibbs is not good.
Oh, bummer.
But I also saw a couple of his comedies that he made in the 70s with Bill Cosby. Those were, I don't know, they're so-so, I guess. It's interesting watching it's interesting watching Bill Cosby back in the day, cuz probably like you, Jeremy, I knew Bill Cosby from Cosby Show and stuff like that. And this was a little bit different kind of Bill Cosby.
Interesting.
Anyway, the one that I'm going to recommend on this one is Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. And it's amazing how it feels like it's, you know, I mean, this is obviously a movie that Is sort of ahead of its time, but it's also way too late also at the same time. And you know, the story is very simple. You have a woman who is engaged to a black doctor played by Sidney Poitier, who they met in Hawaii, and they've just met in Hawaii. Like they've only known each other for 2 weeks, and they're already engaged. And then she's bringing him back to meet the parents, played by Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn. Meet the parents and basically just spring this on them. And it's amazing to me how the beginning of this movie, there's no doubt in my mind that Jordan Peele emulated a lot of the things in Guess Who's Coming to Dinner as for the lead up to meeting the parents, because this woman believes, and I believe it's Katharine Hepburn's niece, by the way, playing this. I can't remember her name right off. It's Catherine Naughton, I think, is her name. She is completely naive and believes that her parents are so liberal that she'll be able to bring Sidney Poitier back home, and they'll be just like, "Ah, that's awesome," and just welcome him with open arms. And Sidney Poitier, much like Daniel Kaluuya in Get Out, is like, "Have you? I mean, you know, we live in the world, right? Basically, you know, this is not something that you spring on your parents." What follows is, you know, basically it's a warming up process. Obviously, springing it on people like this is going to be really tough. It's going to be tough no matter what, right? Because you're like, I met some dude in Hawaii, I'm going to get married in 2 weeks. It's an interesting detail that I'd like to see this movie without that short window that they're in. Because that gives them an out. It gives Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn an out on their, you know, their, I don't know if I'd struggle to call it just sheer racism, but like it gives them an out for them to be uncomfortable, basically. And Katharine Hepburn at first is like, I don't know about this. And then she sort of really like quickly gets on board with it. But Spencer Tracy is the one who's kind of like, I don't know, I don't like this, I don't like this. And Sidney Poitier's parents who are also coming over for dinner later, they're not completely on board with it. So it's a bunch of like conversations, you know, how are we going to deal with this? What do we need to do? Poitier puts gives them a choice. If you're both not on board with this, I'm not going to go through with the marriage, which is what the whole movie sort of hinges on. Does Spencer Tracy end up coming around in the end? Spencer Tracy is actually in his final days on this earth. In this movie, he dies 13 to 14. It's somewhere around there, days after this movie is filmed.
Oh man.
And he has a big speech at the end where Katharine Hepburn, you can see her visibly crying because she knows that this might be his last performance.
Wow.
This movie's really good. I was having discussions about this, one thing about this movie is that it's kind of like what Jackie Robinson had to do when he got in the major leagues, right? He had to be perfect. He had to be absolutely the finest gentleman to get into. Like, he couldn't have any flaws. And Sidney Poitier, he's a doctor. He's decorated. He's, you know, he's been all around the world. He's super respected and all that. So they really make sure that he's like the utmost and top person he can be. In this. So Guess Who's Coming to Dinner does have some kind of flaws here and there, but the fact that the movie came out in the year of Loving versus Virginia and came out, I think that court case happened just a few days after this movie was shot, or it came out. I can't remember, but it's the same year. So they're even talking about stuff that where it's illegal in some states for this couple to be a thing. In the movie, saying there's 20 states that it's illegal, and then a few days later it was not a thing anymore. It was the Supreme Court had already handed down their decision. This movie is great, though. Especially there's a moment where Katharine Hepburn put somebody who works for her completely in their place and fires her by the end. Like, it's this one big long, like, this friend who's really concerned about what this relationship means and everything, and is saying all these little snide things. Katharine Hepburn, like, all in a walk down to this woman's car, like, just blindsides her with this big, huge, like, and I want you to take your things out of the office, and I want you to do all this other stuff. It's just really great. So, highly recommend Guess Who's Coming to Dinner if you've never seen it.
Now, which character does Ashton Kutcher play?
He plays.
My small recommend that I think Chris would also like to recommend, I'm not 100% sure he feels the same way, is Yellow Jackets, a television show on Showtime that is 10 episodes long. And I originally wanted that to be the main recommend on one of these episodes until Chris and I realized, hey, that's 10 hours. We can't really ask somebody to do that in 1 week, even though that is how I watched the show. It's basically a decorated girls' high school soccer team plane crash in the woods of the upper Northwest. There are flashes of some weird tree voodoo religion, possible cannibalism. And then we're constantly flashing forward 25 years and following about four of the girls who apparently got out of the wilderness at some point. They were there for, we know they were there for 19 months. And so each episode advances, you know, the time in the wilderness by a week or two, sometimes more. And then the time in the present day by a couple of days, it feels like, maybe a week at the most. And it's just bonkers. It's absurd, but it's also great. It's incredibly acted. And it is doing what Lost did in a much better way, in that it is constantly giving you answers, but there are just so many damn questions that some of the bigger ones remain out there. But I feel like every episode gives you an answer and you're like, oh, wow, so that's what happened with that. But they've just layered it, you know, according to them, they went in and pitched, you know, basically a 5-season plan, or at least an end they knew they would get to. And it is very much like Lost in that you end up wanting to speculate, you end up wanting to discuss and making theories and predictions, and then seeing how freaking wrong you were because the show continues to surprise. I don't think very many of my predictions have come true. Chris, give us your brief thoughts on Yellow Jackets.
Yeah. Jonathan told us about this, and I know we're on the first episode of a new podcast here. So if you don't know who Jonathan is, Jonathan is a part of our network, and he's on the Behind the Scenes podcast and everything. And I had seen a bunch of promos for this before it came out. Two episodes in, Jonathan was like, this show is great. And I was like, I'm kind of interested in that, because I love Melanie Lynskey and I love Christina Ricci. And so I'm going to give this a shot. And then the third episode, I think, came out, and that's when I binged the first three. And I was like, yeah, all right, I'm ready to watch. I'm ready to go to the end with this show. Yeah. And it's great to see. I mean, I love Juliette Lewis and who is the it's Tawny Cypress, who's another great. Their counterparts, their teenage counterparts, are all well done too. Jasmine Savoy Brown, who a lot of people have been exposed to in the past week or two, is in that new Scream movie.
Right. Yep.
I had seen her also in The Leftovers. That's where I first saw her. She's great. And this cast is phenomenal. It's just one of those shows, you know, like there's always just danger, lurking around the corner. We know for a fact who survived, but we don't know for a fact who's going to die. And if there are people that we think are dead, right. that are going to come back. So you see the drama on the island with these girls trying to learn how to survive, and there's only a couple of adults that are actually only one adult, I think, on the entire island, the coach that came with them. So it's an interesting dynamic because the whole politics of everything changes at this point. What was in high school, who were the queen bees in high school are not going to be the queen bees here on the island. There's right. people who have different skill sets at this point. These people who have different values. And that girl who plays Misty, I don't know her name. I know Christina Ricci plays the adult. It's Samantha Hanratty who plays the younger Misty. And there's obviously something, there's a screw loose there.
Yeah.
And it's just fun watching her because she's kind of like well suited to be on this island.
Yes.
And realizes it pretty early.
They're not technically on an island, I don't think, but
no, yeah.
I keep saying wilderness. Island too.
Yeah. This wilderness. Yeah. I'm sure it's not on an island. It's the Pacific Northwest.
You fucked up in your first episode.
Right. What a bunch of dicks you guys are. But you see that drama unfolding on the island. We have hints of what's going to happen. We don't know exactly where everything is going quite yet. Meanwhile, their adult versions are out there and everybody wants their story. They've only told them the bare bones story, the survival story that I don't think it's even gotten into they haven't even said anything like that's negative or dark. It's just people right. died. What are you going to do? They're all trying to live their lives now, you know, X amount of years later. How many is it? 20-something? 20?
Well, it's the 25th anniversary or reunion. Yeah, 25th. Or 25, I think.
Yeah. They're trying to live their lives, and you have the Tawny Cypress character, Thaisa, is running for a local office. And
like a state representative, I think. Something
yeah,
like that.
Something like that. There are people who seem to know their secret and are about to expose it. And they're trying to figure out who it is and if they can quell it because, trying to live a normal life under these circumstances is going to be impossible. So I highly recommend it as well. There's just a lot of appealing actors in this and it's got all the intrigue that you could want. Out of
I think it would work for anyone, but I think if you were a 90s kid, I think there's something in the flashbacks. There's so much great 90s music being used. And yeah. then they've done this awesome thing of taking three actresses who sort of got their start in the 90s with Melanie Lynskey and Christina Ricci and the other one.
Juliette Lewis.
And they're the modern day versions of these girls who were from the 90s. And it's just, I feel like I'm in really good hands of people who know exactly where they want this to go. Mm-hmm. It was a whirlwind of a ride, and I give it three thumbs up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Three.
We got one season in the books and apparently four more to go. So yeah. There's all sorts of things that can happen at this point, but it's definitely a recommend. Go out and make some time for that for sure.
Do you want to dive into the big thing or do you want to do another small recommend?
Let's do another small recommend and get into the big thing.
All right.
There's a movie I saw over the weekend that I had been wanting to see for a long time. And I don't know if it does it justice to make it a small recommend, but it's one of those movies that infect your soul and you have to watch and you have to talk about it.
Okay.
So there's three friends of mine who once one Saturday every month has a movie night. We take turns picking movies and everything. About a year or so ago, I wanted to see Ken Russell's The Devils. Ooh. Because it was considered to be like this masterpiece So I was like, okay, I had never heard of this before, but it was rave reviews. Any kind of review that you could find on it, not streaming anywhere. It has had times where it streamed on like the Criterion Channel and Shudder and things like that. But can't find a Blu-ray of it. And you can find DVDs, but they're like Korean DVDs, and you don't know exactly if they're gonna like work in your player a lot of times. Finally, I was like, you know what? I want to see this movie. And, you know, went ahead and took the plunge to buy this Korean DVD. Hopefully it has English on it and you don't have to worry about it being dubbed in Korean or something like that. And sure enough, I got one that was, it was English and everything. So, The Devils, I don't know some people have maybe seen Benedetta, movie that's come out, Paul Verhoeven. I think Paul Verhoeven tried to make his own The Devils with Benedetta.
Hmm.
But The Devils is a far superior product. It is about this small town that has a priest played by Oliver Reed. For you youngins out there, and maybe, God, your youngins may not even be old enough to remember Gladiator at this point, but he's in Gladiator. He's Proximo in Gladiator. Oliver Reed plays a priest, but he's a different kind of priest. He likes to sleep around he's kind of a dick. He's got this one woman who's having his baby and he doesn't want to have anything to do with her. But he does fall in love with this one woman and ends up marrying her. There's a lot of strain in the town because there's a plague going on. Catholics versus Protestants is in play at this town and everything. There's a lot of political intrigue, and there are people who don't like this priest, even though he's kind of a dick. I think he does pretty much still give people, they'd still like him. There's a lot of people who still like him. Vanessa Redgrave plays a nun inside this one nunnery. I can't think of the name. The convent.
It's not a hatchery. I know that much.
It's not a hatchery. You're right. You're correct. Vanessa Redgrave. The first time we see Vanessa Redgrave, she's got this weird posture. Her back is all like, I don't know if she's got something that I don't know if that I. You got to realize, I watched this movie. It is in English, but it's also a DVD. So mm-hmm. if there's anything that they kind of skirted over in it, I did not hear it. Mm-hmm. But she apparently has some sort of affliction. She seems to lust after this priest whenever he walks by and everything. And she ends up, for what various reasons, she ends up accusing him of raping her. And she wants to take him down. And this starts this whole political process, basically, of people coming to the town. There's all these different positions of power who are interested in what's going on here, asking their questions, and then coming to the conclusion that she must be telling the truth about all of this because of everything else that they're seeing and everything. The movie just gets super wild. It's right out of the bat, it's pretty wild. But once all the political figures come in and they're asking their questions and there's no better encapsulation of power corrupting absolutely than in this whole Catholic Church structure and political structure and everything. People just trying to come up with the conclusions that they want out of this. It's got very Crucible-esque vibes to it. But once these people come in and start asking their questions, everybody's kind of like insane, but it's not like they're just acting for the camera. there's an intensity to it. I can't explain it. You have to watch this movie to really know. Now, this movie ain't for everybody. It is. You don't, you know, like if you're easily offended at sacrilegious type of things, you don't want to watch this movie. Because there's a point where the nuns go crazy and they're like stripping down naked and they're running around and just doing weird shit. And, you know, and it's, and there's even scenes they cut out of this movie that Warner Brothers was like, like when they approached them to make a director's cut or whatever, they're like, yeah, no, we're good. We don't need to put that back in the movie. The amount of hysteria that this trial, creates, is just, it's something that just never lets up. Once it starts, it just kind of just infests your mind. It's just like a constant, I don't know, it propels itself towards its ending. And all Oliver Reed does, much like Mel Gibson in Braveheart, he has to just confess that he has done something wrong. And Oliver Reed is basically the guy who's like, I never did anything wrong. What would that be if I just said that I did something wrong when I didn't? So I'm just going to go ahead and you just do what you have to do and everything to me. Oliver Reed is amazing in this. So is Vanessa Redgrave. And there's a lot of people who I don't know the names of who are great actors in this. They're just absolutely fantastic. It's a movie that you have to see to really get what I'm at getting at, because this is by the end of it, I turned to you know, the people I was watching it with. I was like, I don't know, but I feel like I just watched a masterpiece here. And they were like, yeah, this is, and then like days later, we're still texting about it and everything about how this movie is still like just sort of infected us and everything. It's called The Devils. You will not be able to find it in America, at least, on a streaming service, although it has had its time on some streaming services. But if you can find it on like Amazon or something like that, I would highly recommend getting it.
All right.
And maybe one day they'll make one of those awesome Blu-ray special edition type of things and we can watch it in its full glory. But, really, really, really like that movie.
All right. Well, I was going to recommend a new Mountain Dew flavor, but I'm actually going to go with a more substantial pop culture recommend, and that is Kacey Musgraves' newest album. I've liked her music ever since Follow Your Arrow. That was the first song I ever heard of hers.
She made a huge splash with that.
She did. And she has won many awards. She is a decorated singer-songwriter. Her most recent album before this latest one was a masterpiece. Slow Burn is probably my favorite song on there. Rainbow, there's every song is great, and her songwriting is just has so much depth. You can have melancholy followed immediately by something hopeful. Emotions just exist in parallel in her music. Well, she and her husband broke up. They divorced between the last album and this newest one, and her newest one is fearless. It's just raw. She's singing very openly. I do think it's interesting, and you could do a case study on how she's basically made an entire album about an ex and no one has given her shit about it. But Taylor Swift makes one song about an ex.
Well, and
like she's targeting him or something.
I know. That's how like ridiculously popular Taylor Swift is. She is.
Yeah.
It's one of those where it's not fair. I'm not saying it's fair. It's just that she has achieved a level of fame where she doesn't even really have to come out with any albums anymore. It's, you know, she's more than just a singer at this point.
That's true.
And she built a lot of this empire on singing about exes, and there were so many of them that we had to, you know, we heard about in the news, and who knows how many of those songs were actually about the people that we think that they're about, but
right.
That's what they were branded as. But anyway, I digress.
The latest album is called Starcrossed. It came out in September, and if you've liked any of her music that you've heard, this is just her getting better and better and maturing as a songwriter. I'm a big fan. So that's my last small recommend for today.
All right, everybody, it's time to talk about BetterHelp.
BetterHelp. Listen, the last 2 years have seen so much go online, right? A lot of people are working from home and doing Zoom meetings. A lot of healthcare went to telehealth. Everything has changed because of this pandemic. Fast food restaurants of the future are all going to be drive-through. Yes, I know I'm getting off course, but my point is BetterHelp was ready for this before this happened. BetterHelp is online counseling with licensed professional therapists in your area. They have over 20,000 licensed professional therapists. You don't have to leave the comfort of your own home. You don't have to change out of your pajamas. A lot of what people seek therapy for is anxiety, like me. And sometimes going to an office or even driving somewhere can cause anxiety. BetterHelp is also great because it offers you several ways to do therapy. If you want to do text messaging, if you want to do email, if you want to do phone calls, or if you want to do video. You can also message your therapist whenever you want, and you'll get a prompt response. And you can schedule therapy sessions that work around your schedule. So yeah. Go to BetterHelp.com/Recotopia. That's RECOTOPIA. Reco, as in recommend, and topia, as in utopia. So BetterHelp.com/Recotopia, and use the discount code Recotopia, and you will get 10% off your first month, which it's not nothing. Yeah. I'm in therapy myself. I have seen so much growth in the last 5 to 10 years as I have truly started to focus on who I am and what events in life made me this way and how I can learn tips and tricks to keep some of those demons at bay. So if you have been thinking about checking out therapy, I encourage you to go to betterhelp.com/recotopia, use the discount code Recotopia, and get 10% off your first month.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
I'm fine. It's just that you're so big.
It's so huge.
It's a good rule, but this is bigger than rules.
It's bigger on the inside.
Is it?
I noticed.
The big recommend, so this is one that we've both seen, and I picked this one because it's just one of those movies that I was not expecting very much from at all. I had not seen a Jane Campion movie for a really long time. She did In the Cut, which I believe was the last one that I saw of hers, and I didn't like it too well, although I have seen some retro reviews recently that said this movie's better than you think. And she's, you know, known for The Piano and everything. I saw this trailer, and the trailer was like, okay, this looks really pretty, but what is this movie about? What is the deal with this movie? Mm-hmm. Why is Benedict Cumberbatch, why does he hate Cody Smith McPhee so much in this movie? Mm. And what does it have to do with Jesse Plemons and Kirsten Dunst and all that? And there's just a lot of like very vague things that were going on. And it even ends on that weird, like Benedict Cumberbatch whistling, as he turns towards Kirsten Dunst that we find out later. And it is like the power of the dog. And you're like, okay, this is going to be that one of these pretentious Western type movies. And I don't know, it may still be pretentious for all I know, but, God, I loved it. I loved this movie so much. Yeah. And why? Why yeah. do I love this movie so
That's
much?
That's the key, right? Because I've seen it twice. I watched it last night for the second time to prep, and I loved it even more.
Yeah.
But I am still not 100% sure what it's about. I think it's about, we'll dive into this in a minute. I think it's about multiple things.
Yeah,
and
that's, it is.
That's probably the point. But it's not like a lot of movies that I fall in love with
Yeah,
it is visually stunning, like a Chloe Zhao films, with the mountains. Like Montana is very visually beautiful in this movie.
Yeah.
And I think that's a part of what makes the characters stand out so much.
Mm-hmm.
Especially Cumberbatch, who apparently was in character on set the entire time. And I read yesterday, Jesse Plemons said it was kind of irritating.
Yeah.
Which
I mean, I can only imagine what that's like, right? Where you want to discuss a scene with somebody and they're just like, and why is it always when they're method acting? And I don't know if this is true method acting, but if they're going to stay in their character during the whole thing, why is it always the most asshole characters? Like, they're never, I think the last time I heard of a character that was method that wasn't an asshole character was Sean Penn in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Cause he was playing, why can't I think of the name?
Spicoli.
He was playing Spicoli, you know, he was always Spicoli on the set and everything. But like, it seems like, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis, who's always playing these asshole characters, he's always in character as that person. And then, you know, of course, Cumberbatch playing an ornery character, he's got to be this kind of dickhead too. But there are a lot of parallels, by the way, to this movie, and There Will Be Blood, especially a Johnny Greenwood score, which is going to make you totally think of There Will Be Blood, not to mention the Western setting and all that. But I think it is about a lot of things. When you look at that conversation that he and Jesse Plemons have at the beginning of this movie, you can tell there's something that Cumberbatch is wanting. He's alone, I think, as much as Plemons is alone. Plemons is definitely feels like he's alone. Cumberbatch feels like he's alone. He lost a good friend, a mentor, many years ago, and it appears that the brothers have never really gelled. And you can, I mean, Cumberbatch and Plemons, yeah, that's a completely different set of brothers there. They're supposed to be somewhat close in age, but like Plemons is in real life 11 years younger than Cumberbatch. So a lot of the times when Cumberbatch is like 25 years ago, I'm like, well, 25 years ago, Jesse Plemons was in middle school. But you can see that there's a wanting there. He wants them to have a relationship. It doesn't matter how ornery he is or anything. He wants the brothers to be brothers, and he wants Jesse Plemons to be as good a ranch hand as he is. Obviously not. That's probably one of the big reasons why they haven't gotten close over the years. They have different interests completely.
Yeah.
And so that's what starts driving a wedge, is when Plemons runs into Kirsten Dunst and starts courting her and everything, and lavishing attention on her and bringing her back into the family. It's a big, huge invasion to Cumberbatch.
Well, and he's,
when that happens,
he gets jealous too, I think. Like, as the movie progresses, you begin to learn there was maybe a lot more to this Bronco Henry relationship than he ever lets on. There's even a moment near the end where he tells a story about huddling together in the freezing cold, body to body, to stay warm, and the kid goes naked, and Cumberbatch ignores him.
Like,
okay, so they were naked.
Yeah.
And that in and of itself doesn't have to mean they were lovers. But I do feel like the movie is hinting that he was in love with this guy, and he lost him. He lost him, you know, 20 years ago, and there's been this gaping wound. And so, you know, I think my first viewing, I thought Cumberbatch's character, whose name is Phil, I thought he was psychotic. And maybe he is, but on my second viewing, I think he just wants everyone to be as miserable as he is.
Yeah.
Like, he, as soon as Plemons, he's already calls Plemons fatso all the time.
Yeah.
He already belittles the guy, but then that guy finds a wife and he immediately starts picking away at that. And like, the way he that whole banjo piano scene is a fucking masterpiece, because she's trying to learn to play the piano. There's this big dinner party coming. She's not very good. She used to play it in the pit at strip clubs or something, or
movie theaters.
Sorry. Same thing. So she's super nervous. I actually think Plemons is kind of a dick for pushing this so much.
Yeah.
Because he puts her in a bad position.
Well, he definitely is a stressor in this.
Cumberbatch
gets a lot of the blame for driving her to drink. We'll get into that too. But think about what he does, what Plemons does during this whole thing, like forcing the piano, forcing a meet with the governor and all this,
and his
like
parents.
Really high pressure stuff. Yeah. And his parents, all this high pressure stuff. And then there are times where he's gone for an entire week. Apparently they alternate weeks in which they're gone to go at the town or something, get supplies or something. So there's alternate weeks where he's not there and she has to deal with Cumberbatch the whole time for a whole week.
Yep.
And then when Plemons does come back, he's, you know, let's put a baby grand piano in the den or the living room so that you can play it. And I brought this up, I think, before in, our older days. It seems kind of like Citizen Kane, where he's trying to get, he's trying to get, God, what's the name of the girl, the opera singer? I can't even remember right now. I've seen Citizen Kane a million, Susan Alexander.
Oh, yeah.
He's trying to get Susan to be this big opera singer. And of course she's not very good at it at all, but keeps forcing her to go out there and sing and get bad reviews. And the only good review comes from his papers and stuff like that. It's kind of almost like that, what Plemons is doing with her on a very smaller scale, obviously. But it is interesting like that, that he puts pressure on her as well. So,
yeah, I wrote down that one of the reasons I'm not sure what the movie is about is that the first hour feels like it's about the siblings. It's about Phil and George and, you know, their uncomfortable situation. But once he marries, then it seems to be about that weird, you know, Phil wants to make everybody miserable. Then the kid comes back from school and it turns into this whole other thing where Phil goes pretty quickly from trying to like terrorize the kid to taking him under his wing, because he realizes that will make Kirsten Dunst even more uncomfortable. Rather than just picking on him, if he like befriends him, and it's just, it's evil, but there is also something, he sees something in the kid, and it's not just that they can both see the shadow of the dog on the mountains. He does take a certain liking to him that's genuine. It's such a complex character, man. I want Andrew Garfield to win Best Actor because he was so electric, but in any other year there are so many great lead performances and this would be one. And if Cumberbatch wins, he deserves it. It's the most nuanced, layered, textured character in the whole film. I loved it. I love it. I don't know why I love it.
Yeah, it is an interesting thing, talking about why he takes this kid under his wing. I've read that too, that he's doing this to throw it in the face of Kirsten Dunst in this to drive her even crazier and everything. But one thing that makes me think that it's possible that he started it off that way, but then it was, I don't know. What the order of the movie is that he's always hard on this Cody Smith McPhee guy, over and over and over again, just constant abuse or constant like kidding and you know, whatever. But once he discovers the hideaway place that Cumberbatch is bathing in and has that handkerchief around his neck that has Bronco Henry's initials on it. And of course he's seen now, we don't know if Phil has seen his nose that he found the stash of the old like physique magazines that yeah. are in the little underneath the tree or wherever it is that has Bronco Henry's name on it. And it's like, it's naked men who are like muscle guys or whatever. We don't know if he's found that or not, but right after that scene, there's a scene where he's where, I don't want to keep on saying Cody Smick McPhee. What is his name?
Peter.
Yeah. Peter walks through that camp and everybody's calling him homophobic names and everything. He walks up, ignores them, looks at these birds in a nest, and then walks back. And then at the time he's walking back, that's when Phil says, "Come over here." And
we got off on the wrong foot. Yeah.
And yes, that's horrifying. To Rose, Kirsten Dunst's character and everything, but like, it just, I don't know. It feels like if it was always that, that would be something that he's, that we'd always see to make sure he'd be looking back to see what she's feeling every moment of the way. But as soon as this starts happening, she's kind of out of the picture for a while.
And we get to see
her in, you know, alcoholism get worse and worse and worse. And there is a moment where she comes out and says, "No, I don't want him to be out there with him," and all that. And, but there is definitely something, and it could be what broke the ice was that shadow dog thing. Like, you know, like only Bronco Henry could come up with this. Like that's been his worldview over this whole time. This Bronco Henry is the upper elite echelon of men, and he's the only one who could see that dog out there. And now this guy comes in a few seconds, finds it right away, and it's sort of been like, whoa, that's blown his mind. It's like it's like when you've been in this bubble all your life, and somebody from the outside comes in and just like immediately does things that you thought were hard. That's when he starts to really get in, like starts to respect him and everything. And then he's not hard on him the rest of the movie, really.
No.
He does some tough love type stuff. Like, you know, he's trying to ride a horse and all the people are like always trying to keep him from falling off the horse. And he's like, nope, let him figure it out on his own.
Yeah. Well, do you think he at some point sees an opportunity for him to be a Bronco Henry to the kid?
Yeah. There's even a point where he says he didn't start riding until your age. I think he does see some things in him that are exactly alike, and that he can maybe mold him. He can be a mentor to him. And there may even be, you know, there may be even some subtext in here, because he does say at one point, he's like, "Don't let your mom raise you as a sissy," or something like that. And there's sort of that in him too, like, let me knock the gay out of you, essentially, is what he's saying. And so there's this sort of, it feels like there's an opportunity for him to make him a tough guy.
I think you're right. I feel like all along he sees himself in this kid, right? Mm-hmm. Like I'm inclined to believe, from my opinion, that Phil is probably gay or has had mm-hmm. gay experiences. And so when he first sees the kid, he belittles him because he remembers, "I used to be not as macho as I am now." And then I think he turns it around and starts mentoring him because he sees, well, I can turn him into a tougher guy, just like I was turned into a tougher guy by Bronco Henry, even though mm-hmm. we probably had sex. I also wrote down, and this is neither here nor there, but I got to get it out. Why do you cast Thomas and McKenzie for one scene?
Yeah, I don't get that. I've seen a lot of that recently, where just it makes me wonder if she did this movie before she kind of blew up.
Okay.
Where she was still kind of taking these small roles and everything. And then, so she did it, or she accepted the role and then went on to do like a couple of other big things. And then she came back and said, well, I agreed to do this. So
that's fair. Yeah, I thought maybe it was a larger role at some point and that got edited down. Because I'm going along this whole movie going, wow, there really only are a few people you know in this movie. Mm-hmm. And then bam, there's a face. I was like, I know her. Mm-hmm. Didn't make much sense to me. Yeah. this is a movie I will definitely be watching again and again. And probably finding new ways to understand it every time I watch it and new things to take away from it. But I do love, I think in general, we want these big recommends to be a discussion about the film, right? There's definitely plenty of spoiling that we've talked about here. I don't think we'll do big spoils, right?
Right.
Like we won't spoil that Snape killed Dumbledore or Dumbledore was dead the whole time. Bruce Willis killed Snape. but, you know, I do love the way this movie ends with the kid. And we'll get into this a little bit more with the double feature. But the kid makes choices I did not expect in the name of protecting his mother. Good stuff. Great acting. All four of the leads are great, I thought.
Yeah.
Jesse Plemons was harrowing in Breaking Bad. Then he was hilarious in Game Night. And here he's playing one of the meekest characters I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
It just to, you know, to go back to that, what each brother's role is in this, you know, like it's clear that Phil's the leader and he is just he's just the brother, because there's a point where he comes, but he's late to the bar that they're all drinking at.
Yeah.
And he goes, all right, come on, guys, it's time to eat. And everybody's just kind of like, yeah, everybody's just kind of like, what? You know, and they then finally takes, then it takes Cumberbatch to actually say something. A huge recommend, I really wasn't expecting it to be this affecting to me. I really enjoyed it. So,
all right, Power of the Dog on Netflix, a Netflix original. And now let's move into the super secret double features recommendation.
This will be interesting.
Shh, be very, very quiet.
Secret? What secret?
Our dirty little secret.
I tell you something I've never told anyone.
Now I'm going to give you a few that I almost went with.
Okay.
I almost went with Phantom Thread for a very obvious final act parallel. But I don't know that the entire movies are sharing the same themes. I almost went with Cape Fear. And I wrote, a marriage and a terrible person are thrust together, and the child is intrigued by the terrible person.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
But again, those two movies wouldn't really feel like a match. So I'm going with a movie that's 20-some years old called Fresh, about a chess-playing kid who lives in the projects, and Samuel L. Jackson is his estranged father. Their only interactions are at Washington Square Park playing chess. We've been there. And he is very hard on his son as a chess father. But his son is, you know, pretty good at chess. And this is an obvious parallel, chess, because the kid is basically being used by two or three different drug dealers to be a mule. One has his sister kind of hooked on drugs and dating him, and feels like the kid is under his thumb for that. That's Giancarlo Esposito. And I'm not sure if you've seen this movie.
You recommended it several years ago.
Yeah.
And I watched it probably that weekend.
I think that's right. Yeah.
Really, really, really liked it. I haven't seen it since. I remember liking it, but I don't remember much about it at this point. It's been about 5 years, I think.
Yeah. I think the reason I would pair this as a double feature is the kid doing everything he can. In this case, it's his sister and not his mother, but to get a family member out of a bad situation and into a better one. And in doing so, outsmarts adults that you would think would not be outsmarted by a child. Powerful ending. And I don't really want to, it's not a spoiler, but I don't want to ruin it, because it'll get you, I think. But I just think it would make a nice pairing. It's not the same kind of setting. It's not shot the same way, but just the idea of an innocent kid with toxicity all around him who finds a way to sort of bring his relative and him through that. So my surprise double feature for Power of the Dog is Fresh.
All right. I like it. I like the thinking there, because it's easy. It would have been easy. It's not an easy movie to pair, but it would have been an easy movie to pair with something like There Will Be Blood, which has Daniel Day-Lewis, the Plainview character, is so much kind of like this Benedict Cumberbatch character. So, stuff like that, or other Westerns or whatever. I like the idea of pairing it with something that on the surface doesn't seem like, a true double feature and everything. And I like your reasoning for it too.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I believe we have time for a few questions. What do you
yeah.
say?
Yeah, let's do some questions.
Question.
I got something to say.
I want the truth.
I am listening.
All right, so I'm going to start with who is the most confused movie character you've ever noticed? Mm-hmm. Like people who aren't aware of the plot details or character details that the viewer gets to see, which would lead them to be extremely confused. Example here is Danny Houston in Wonder Woman. Seemed like mm-hmm. he would have been confused by who the hell Wonder Woman was and why she was accusing him of being an evil god.
Right, right.
So what do you think about that one?
Yeah, and I don't know if the questioner is setting a parameter here of you know something the character doesn't, and the character is going in confused about something. Like, so one that I don't think fits that parameter, but is a confused character, and for good reason, because it's a confusing plot, it's Jeff Lebowski in The Big Lebowski. He is thrust into a situation that is completely confusing, with a lot of different characters that keep coming in and out of his life that he are loosely connected to everything that's going on. He's just a simple stoner guy, and he keeps running into stuff that just doesn't make sense. Like, why are there people busting down his door and asking him where the money is and everything? Why is it that when they do throw the money out, that the bad guys say they didn't get the money? And like, just a lot of like, characters just keep coming in and out and doing things like, who the fuck is this guy? Who the fuck is he? I also picked the gas station cashier in Gross Point Blank. It's a great scene because John Cusack comes back to his home, and it's his old house. His old house has been converted into a gas station, and he walks in, and he has no clue what's going on. Why is this house a gas station? He goes up to the cashier and he's like, who are you? And the guy, and the cashier's like, what? And he's like, who are you? What? Why are you here? What is it? He starts asking these questions that don't have any like real concrete answers.
Yeah.
Other than the fact that the gas station is here and I got hired. And to think of all the things that end up happening in there, where that kid ends up playing the Doom arcade game, which I think is interesting. He's playing that Doom arcade game, and like all that big shootout happens behind him while he's playing it. And Ace of Spades is playing, and Cusack ends up like pulling him out of the store, and he turns around and sees the whole store trashed and it blows up. And at the very end of it, Cusack's like, are you okay? And he's like, no, I'm hurt, I'm pissed, and I need to get another job.
That's much better than my answer. I went with J.K. Simmons in Terminator Genesis. Who is only confused by the fact that no one else has seen the evidence he has seen. Mm-hmm. And it leads to this across time. This is a time traveling movie. It's not just one or two things. This guy has seen, I think, three different evidences of Terminators.
Yeah.
And he goes back to the video room to try and get video proof, and it's been destroyed. And he goes, God damn, time traveling robots always covering up their tracks.
Yeah. And that's got to be like the line of the last 10 years or so. And it's in a terrible movie.
It is. It sure is. But yeah, and maybe he's not confused as much as exasperated, but just like, I can't ever prove to anyone that this is. There's a great episode. There's a great episode of Frasier where Frasier starts dating a supermodel, but coincidences keep anyone from ever meeting her, and they end up believing that he's made her up, and mm-hmm. She doesn't really exist. I feel like that's what this guy must feel like. Let's do another one.
There's a thing, by the way, in movies. I don't know what the, and maybe it's just a me thing, but it's always frustrating to watch a character try to explain to other characters this insane stuff that they have no chance of ever proving to that person.
Yes,
and so I always sit there and end up going, what's even the point of this at this point? Like, just don't even bother trying to tell the story because you're not going to be able to prove it. And there's always just that like point in a movie where you're just like, God, this is just a waste of time. Why are you telling somebody that you're insane?
Oh man. All right. Let's somebody wanted to know our most anticipated films of 2022. And
okay.
We overlap a little bit, but I'll let you go first.
This is sad to me, the movies that I wrote down, because first off, I'm not really all that aware of the so-called newer type stuff that's coming out. Like, I haven't seen a bunch of trailers of like some original comedy or, you know, whatever. And obviously the ones that are on the slate right now are all these comic book adaptations. There's probably more in this year than I have ever seen in my life are coming out in 2022. They just so happen to be ones that I do want to watch, and I genuinely do want to watch these, but God, man, I am really, really upset that there's not anything that there's no trailer I've seen of something new that's like, oh yeah, that is when that comes out in June or whatever. I'm gonna watch that immediately. But we both wrote the Batman down. I am very interested in watching the Batman. I really want to see what they do with this Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness. And especially since it was didn't Raimi end up directing this?
Uh-huh.
So Sam Raimi is on that. I'm going to be really interested to see how he does that. I am interested in Lightyear, the sort of the Toy Story tangent movie.
Yes.
Chris Evans is playing Lightyear and Buzz Lightyear in this, where it's an actual story, not the toy Buzz Lightyear, but the actual Buzz Lightyear
that the character toy would be based on,
that the toy is based. So I'm kind of interested to see that, even though that's yet again, it's derivative of, you know, of stuff that they already have made. I'm going to be all about that Thor Love and Thunder movie because yeah, Taika Waititi I'm pretty much at this point, I've seen almost everything he's done, and I'm just all right. Just I'm fine. Just go ahead and give it to me. It's Thor 4, and I'm wanting to watch it. I want to see. I hated the first two, and I love the last one. So yep. Let me see this one. And then there is a Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, but it's a part one, of course.
Yes.
I want to see that too, because the last one of those was great too, so I'm gonna want to see this. So it's a lot of comic book adaptations, and I'm really sad about that.
I should have known they would do this. I do like that Across the Spider-Verse is taking him into other universes this time instead of bringing other spiders into ours, and they're doing different animation styles for each different universe. So I'm very intrigued with that. Another one that I did not write down that I thought of before we recorded, and I may not have shared this trailer with you, And if I did, I apologize. If I didn't, I apologize. Everything Everywhere All at Once. This is an A24 movie that comes out in March, starring Michelle Yeoh as an aging immigrant who discovers that she can tap into different universes of lives she could have led, including Kung Fu Master and whatnot. And she alone can save the world by harnessing all these different hers. And so it starts out, she's got like mundane life and job, and then all of a sudden she's doing kung fu because she's like been infused with another her that went on to become a kung fu master.
You did share this trailer. I remember watching it.
And I did not know at the time, or I didn't remember, Jamie Lee Curtis and Jenny Slate are in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
And those are both always welcome. But other than that, what Chris said is basically what I'm looking forward to. The Batman, Top Gun Maverick, if it actually comes out, and Thor Love and Thunder were the main ones I wrote down. The only other question that I think we really could answer would be what we think is going to win Best Picture. And we both wrote down the movie we just discussed and recommended.
And this is interesting. This rarely ever happens, by the way. Usually I go through a bunch of a year's movies that are the top contenders and everything, and I usually come up with a one that is my favorite that is not the Oscar favorite. But apparently, and I was shocked at this, I went to the Vegas odds on this. Power of the Dog is the number one right now. It's the odds-on favorite, along with West Side Story, which is kind of surprising to me, and Belfast. I saw Belfast. Belfast is very good. In fact, not to ruin a future one of these podcasts, but Belfast and Roma would be a great double feature.
Ooh, yeah. Because they're both like almost autobiographical. They're both period pieces and black and white. Yeah, I could totally see it. What about family?
Yeah, Belfast is really, really, really good. But you know, the problem with both Belfast and West Side Story is that nobody went to see them in theaters, and so
even Academy voters probably didn't go see them in theaters. Yeah,
right. And it was it's a strange year. Like, we're still clearly affected by the pandemic, no matter what anybody says. I don't know if there's anybody saying that we're not, but it's clear to me that those home run, there's usually like 6 to 10 home run movies that you could go, I don't know, could be this one, could be that one, and usually there's one even in that group that's like, that's definitely the favorite, that's the one that's just like slam dunk best picture whatever. But this year there's a lot of everything's kind of like segmented, it feels like, and maybe it's just my own experience. There's just not anything out there that's just been like, and to use a bad example, Forrest Gump. There's not a Forrest Gump out there. You know what there's I mean?
No. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. In Power of the Dog is way better than Forrest Gump. I'm just saying that, you know, there's not a movie out there that everybody's seen, big, huge blockbuster or kind of an indie film that still a lot of people have seen, that it even got close to 100 million domestic or whatever. Right. Not anything like that. You know, we're still not all the way back. We're definitely still not all the way back.
I mean, they're pushing hard for Spider-Man No Way Home to get a Best Picture nomination, and it might.
Yeah. Yeah. And
that, to me, is evidence we're not all the way back.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Wreckatopia, episode 2. Which we'll record live, that you can chat along if you are a member of our Patreon, will be my choice on the big recommend, and Chris's turn to come up with a surprise double feature. Mm-hmm. And my choice for episode 2 is Coda. This is a film co-starring Marley Matlin. It is very much about being deaf and having deaf family members. It's on Apple Plus. That may not be a service. Let's just admit we're never going to be able to please everybody every time out of the gate. Not everybody has every streaming service. So we're going to hop around a bit. And you can get, if you have Apple devices, there's very likely like an Apple TV free trial you might not have used yet that lasts like, I think, 3 months.
Oh, yeah.
But CODA is about, CODA stands for a child of deaf adults. And the main character is Ruby, and she is a hearing individual, and her parents and brother are both deaf. And so basically it's kind of a coming of age story, and she's torn between her own dreams and desires. She wants to be a singer, and, you know, her family's dependence on her to translate through sign language everything that is said to them. That's a fishing family. So she's on the boat, you know, signing to the Coast Guard. She's on the dock signing to the guy who buys the fish, and her, well, she's signing to her dad and brother, but interpreting. I was really moved by this. I most of you may know that I am more than 50% deaf, and that is certainly part of it. But the performances are great, and the film does a few things in a few different scenes with sound that are really poignant and really kind of bring home what the movie's trying to say. So give that movie a look if you are able before next episode, and then join us and chat along. And that'll be the next episode. Chris, you want to say any goodbyes?
Yeah, that's going to be it, I think. Definitely go watch CODA, and then talk to us about it next week. That'll be fun. Yeah, that's the end of our first episode of Wreckatopia. So in the past with the Sincast, I would tell you a whole bunch of places to go to talk about this episode. I think I firmly decided I'm not going to do Facebook.
Totally
for this.
Fine with me.
If you guys want to go to our Discord, which is completely like open, but it's also got, you know, mods and stuff. So don't be a dick. Go to our Discord, go to our CinemaSins Discord and talk about, Wreckatopia there. And I will try to respond to as many people as possible. Jeremy could even come over there, as well. But we also have CinemaSins Twitter as well, is a good place to come talk about our first episode of this new podcast. We'd like to hear your input on that. So, that's going to do it for this first episode. Chris Atkinson.
Jeremy Scott.
Yeah, we'll see you.